This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. CPN is a collection of radio shows, lectures, and features from Central Virginia and beyond. Sign up for our email list at cvillepodcast.com. On February 17, 2008, the Albemarle Charlottesville branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People celebrated the national organization's 99th anniversary at an event held at the auditorium at Jackson P. Burley Middle School in Charlottesville. The theme of the day was Standing on the Promises. The master of ceremonies for the event is Mrs. Janet B. Martin, vice president of the Albemarle Charlottesville NAACP.
As we continue with our celebration, Ms. Beckenwari Idani Barrier will read an original poem, God Give Me the Strength.
I wrote this poem as a prayer, giving thanks to God for the founders of the NAACP. God, give me the strength. I humbly kneel upon my knees to say a prayer and ask, dear Lord, please, listen to my thanks and petitions, and if it be your will, allow my wants to come to fruition. Lord, there is so much to thank you for, and to name everything would be an impossible chore. But I'd like to begin by thanking and praising you for bringing together a dynamic and steadfast crew who helped to pull from the snares of discrimination a downtrodden race that yearned for voice and inspiration. It began with Mary White Ovington, who answered the call, a German-born white woman who wanted equality for all. Together, she and William English Rawling birthed into existence an association that chipped away at the fetters of racism with persistence. God, I know you are moving in the hearts of many on February 12, 1909, as the foundations of the NAACP were conjured into design. You were not only using blacks, but Lord, you used Jews and whites too. I guess you knew it would take people from all races for such a momentous breakthrough. The chains of bigotry, hatred, and inequality were broken in more ways than one. It was William Du Bois who used the power of the pen as an unyielding weapon. He once said, a little less complaint and whining, and a little more dogged race, work, and more manly striving would do us more credit than 1,000 civil rights bills. My God, you sure did bless him with literary skills. And then there was a strong-willed Ida Wells Barnett, an advocate for civil rights and a fearless suffragette. Thank you, Lord, for creating such a woman who campaigned tirelessly against Jim Crow laws. Even though her life was threatened and tactics questioned, she would do anything for the cause. As I bring this prayer to a close, Lord, I just have a few things I'd like to propose. You see, this battle down here for equality isn't really quite done. And I know with Senator Barack Obama running in this presidential campaign, we are much farther than when we begun. I'd just like to ask you for the strength to carry on what Mrs. Wells and Dr. Du Bois started long ago, and pray that the efforts of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People never plateau. But Lord, if we lack in strength, then surely don't let us falter in our faith. You said all we needed was faith the size of a mustard seed, and then we'd be straight. The foundation has already been laid, and the price for equality has surely already been paid. So our Father, who art in heaven, keep us unfaltering, unwavering, unshakable, and driven. Amen.
Welcome to the Albemarle Charlottesville NAACP Annual Founders Day Celebration. The recognition given to the founders is an occasion to celebrate a heroic past and great achievements of the national as well as the local founders. In a little room of a New York apartment, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, often referred to as the NAACP, was born on February 12, 1909. What is now known as the nation's oldest and most influential civil rights organization was destined to become the champion for social justice. This afternoon, Dr. Emmerich Turner, president of the Albemarle Charlottesville NAACP, is joined by local and area NAACP presidents in our celebration of the founders. We have with us this afternoon Mrs. Shirley Roundtree, president of the Fluvanna branch, Reverend Michael Turner, president of the Stanton branch, Reverend Mildred Middlebrooks, president of the Waynesboro branch, and Mr. Brandon Kelly, president of the University of Virginia College chapter. chapter which was revitalized by Dr. M. Rick Turner before his retirement from the University of Virginia.
Good afternoon. Mrs. Martin, officers, and members of the Albemarle Charlottesville NAACP, we at the Fluvanna County branch thank you for inviting us to celebrate this marvelous occasion with you. Since its founding on February 12, 1909, the road of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People has been a long and sometimes very hard one to travel. I don't think the founders had any idea that this association would continue in its fight against slavery, oppression, racial, ethical, educational, social, economical, judicial, political, and religious and job discrimination for 99 years. Not just for African Americans, but for minorities of all races or nationalities whose civil and constitutional rights are challenged with injustice day after day. They didn't get to see how instrumental it was in the advancement of the civil rights of the African Americans in this country. We rededicate the Fluvanna branch to uphold the bylaws and the constitution of this great association. We believe that we can accomplish this by encouraging our community to learn about the NAACP and become involved in it, support our scholarship, voters registration, and other programs. We implore our community to be aware of or involved in the educational, political, and social affairs in our county, state, and federal governments. Vote and let your voice be heard. Family and friends, join your local branch of the NAACP and encourage your neighbors to do so as well. We at the Fluvanna County branch of the NAACP will continue to stand on the promise by encouraging our members and community to speak up against discrimination and the violation of minority civil and constitutional rights in this country. We are proud to be part of such a fine association, and because of God's blessings, we are advancing toward another 99 years. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is M. Rick Turner, and I'm the president of the Albemarle Charlottesville branch of the NAACP. You know, sometimes we forget that the NAACP is a protest organization. And the president and the members of the executive board and members in general are not members of the NAACP to be popular. It's not popular, it's not meant to be popular for the NAACP to be a nice organization. We're not a service organization. We're a civil rights organization. You know, I thought long and hard about our theme, Standing on the Promise. I've concluded that standing on the promise means that we have an obligation to stand up and not be afraid to protest injustice. Wherever we see it, we can't be afraid to protest and define what injustice is, with the understanding that injustice to some people is different from others. We don't have to wait until Black History Month to talk about the historical injustices that black folks have experienced. Why? Because an injustice is happening right here in Charlottesville, right now. Some of us thought that Brown versus Board of Education in 1954 ended segregation. Well, if you go to Hendry Street, the Charlottesville High School, alternative school, you see segregation there. You see a group of African-American young people housed together. The ironic part about that is that today we have at least 4 black people on the school board. 4 black people on the school board. Why do we allow this happening in Charlottesville today? Perhaps for the same reason that the majority of black folks in Charlottesville sat down when they massively resisted our children from integrating the public school in 1958. Segregation is not just happening on Henry Street. As I mentioned in church today, segregation is happening at Beaufort and Walker. How is that happening? Well, as I said before, we got black children walking in the same door as white children, but they're going different places. You know what I always tell black children? I want them to be eligible. I want them to be eligible to go to the number one public institution in the country. It's right in our backyard. That's the University of Virginia. They don't have to go to the University of Virginia, but they need to be eligible to go to the finest, one of the finest public institutions in the country. So why is this happening? Because we sit, we don't say anything. What can we do about it? We can all go to a school board meeting and say, why is this happening? If we are going to stand up today, we really need to promise our children. We really need to promise our children that we won't continue to have them tracked into nowhere. There's too few African-American children today being eligible to go to the nation's finest public school system, public institution in the country. So if we want our children to have a decent education, we will not allow our children to be continuously segregated. We must stand up on this promise. Thank you.
On behalf of the Stanton branch of the NAACP, we come today to also say that we are standing on the promises that were given and that were orchestrated in February of 1909. We are standing on the promises of those concerned Americans, both white and black, about the lynchings that were occurring in the South and the other injustices that people of color were enduring in these United States of America. And as we come on today, some 99 years later, we are still standing on the promises that were developed those years ago. It is unfortunate that we still have to have this organization fighting so strongly for the rights of the oppressed and downtrodden humanity. But it is still needed, its work is still vital, and as we reorganize in Stanton, we are recommitting ourselves to stand on the promises that those who have given us hope for this day. And we hope that we can pass this torch on to the next generation as we inspire them to uphold the values and the truths that have been built by our predecessors. On this end, we light the candle to recommit ourselves to the work of justice and equality for all of God's children.
Good afternoon. It is a blessing to be at this particular place at this particular time. On behalf of the Waynesboro, Virginia branch, NAACP, I bring you greetings and I want to say a few words about this auspicious organization. We have heard that the organization was founded February the 12th, 1909, but it was in the aftermath of race riots in Springfield, Illinois, in the summer of 1908, when scores of black people were killed and many were simply run out of town. The call came for those people who were certainly concerned for others that they would come together. And as a result of that, they did come together in New York. W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the founders of the NAACP, certainly went about trying to uplift the black people. He said that to lessen racism, he would use the method of intellectual development. James Weldon Johnson, who was another hard worker in the NAACP, first as field secretary, then executive secretary, gave about 14 years of his life in terms of working with the NAACP. Many of you may remember him from his work, God's Trombone or The Creation. But he felt that racism could be lessened through literature and the arts. Booker T. Washington felt that one could lessen racism through industrial training. And so you had many leaders going about perhaps different methodology, but they wanted the same outcome. We've had many people through the years, some who have given their lives for the cause of justice, some we know about, and some who are the unsung heroes. You've heard that the NAACP is the biggest, the oldest, the boldest, the most cussed, discussed, and all of that. Indeed, we have come a long way. I heard someone a few years ago saying that they wish that the NAACP was dead. And I thought about that, and I said, well, why would one wish that? It would be a good thing if we were judged not by the hue or the color of our skin, but what's within our content and character. But that hasn't happened yet. And so we need civil rights organization to let the country know that we too are great people. We too have given various things for where America finds herself today. Blood, sweat, and tears, working for no pay. The NAACP, as some have said, will be celebrating its 100th birthday next year. Certainly, it would have been nice had it been founded earlier and some of the work had been done. But you and I still realize and recognize that there is still much work to be done. It seems as if we take two steps forward and then we'll pull backward. Some of the things that we're having to deal with today, one would have thought we would not have to deal with those issues, but we do. We realize, too, in terms of social issues, economic, political, educational, we still have got to be on the battlefield, fighting for justice, again, fighting for equality, and certainly, again, for freedom. And so as we remember the founding of this organization, we are thankful for those who stood up, who answered the call, who said that they too would want others to be treated fairly. And so we find ourselves here today, recognizing them, thanking God for the promises that he has made to all of us who love him and love his appearance. We are taking step by step, continuing in the struggle all the way from earth to glory. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Brandon Kelly. I represent the University of Virginia's NAACP chapter. Ms. Martin has asked me to come and speak on the notion of standing on a promise. To me, the phrase standing on a promise denotes more than a commitment. To me, standing on a promise makes me look back at the year's events and marvel about the attention being given to the world issues that are beginning to alter the milieu. In the same breath, we can sit back and observe both intolerance and tolerance, all in one session of the news. A black man and a white woman have a legitimate shot at our country's top leadership position. Gina, Louisiana sparked global reaction to ignorance and bigotry, with America's communities flocking together, creating press and coverage to where six men needed help. America's debate on immigration policy, which carries racial undertones, has split opinions from conservatives to liberals. I think we're living in a progressing America, but much work needs to be done in aid to continue the battle for equality and a fair shot. At home, on campus, on grounds, covert white organizations terrorize the milieu. Gang activity, recruitment threatens our youth academically and socially. Illiteracy still presenting alarming numbers. Despite our path of progression, work still needs to be done. We must stand on our promise to remain dedicated, focused, enthusiastic, and energetic. The next generation needs our influence. Standing on a promise denotes more than a commitment. It is the basis and purpose for why we work to accomplish our goals. Standing on a promise is represented by our mentor groups, voter registration drives, political forums, tutor opportunities, and leadership. To me, standing on a promise is the basis for the University of Virginia's NAACP chapter. Thank you.
The struggle for justice and equality is a legacy that must be passed on to the most important treasures that we have, our children. Shelby and Kristen, do you have something to say to us when you stand on the promise?
As we strive to become the next generation of leaders, we appreciate our historic sense of purpose.
Be confident that that the youth today, we want to live out the mission of our ancestors, for the future of the youth is the future of the world.
And as today's youth, we do want to do our part to contribute to the promise.
Dr. M. Rick Turner, president of the Albemarle Charlottesville NAACP, chair of Area 11 NAACP chapters, and the newly appointed education chair of the Virginia State Conference NAACP, will now come forward to introduce our guest speaker, who has now arrived.
Good afternoon again. I have the honor this afternoon of introducing a soldier. I call Reverend Vines a soldier because black men and women who are strong, serious advocates for justice are rare today, and they belong in a very special category. Reverend Vines was born in Suffolk, Virginia. He is the husband of the former Gloria Key and the father of three children, Erica, Naomi, and Rayfield III. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in music from Norfolk State University, a Master of Education degree in music from Virginia State University, a Master of Divinity degree in theology, and a Doctor of Ministry degree from Virginia Union University. His professional experience as an educator includes teaching in a number of public schools systems throughout Virginia. His membership on several boards and organizations include being a member of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity and a life member of the NAACP. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a soldier of the Civil Rights Movement, pastor of Hungry Road Baptist Church in Glen Allen, Virginia, and the newly elected president of the Virginia State Conference, NAACP, Reverend Dr. J. Rayfield Vines, Jr.
Good afternoon. I'm going to resist the temptation to tell you all to move forward. Firstly, let me give homage to God, to the dais, to all of our guests who have come this afternoon. Let me sort of apologize. I got out of church late. You got to do what you got to do. Amen. I could have turned this down, but knowing that sometimes you get out early, sometimes you get out late, and it depends on the spirit and what's going on, you had to stay until it's over. So let me apologize for being somewhat tardy. I just got in from New York. The National Board of NAACP met yesterday, and it was quite a meeting because all of the key officers were up for re-election. And the results of that re-election, and almost every area had opposition, someone else running, so we had to make a choice. The chairman was, Julian Bond was re-elected as the chair of the National. The vice chair is Brock, is still there. Secretary is Carolyn Coleman, assistant secretary is Carolyn Coleman. Treasurer is Jesse A. Turner. Assistant treasurer is Frank Humphrey. Interim president CEO is Dennis Hayes. And it was a very exciting meeting. They talked about the 46-60 split, and several of very important things that impact us as branches. So if anybody really wants to know, sort of see me after this meeting, I don't need to go through all of it today, but it was very, very interesting and very informative. What we had decided about a month ago, as the president of the state of Virginia, we met with the president of Washington, D.C., and the president of Maryland. The three of us got together and said that it would be good for us to coalesce and to really get to know each other. We make up this particular region, Region 7. And we haven't gotten together before. So Maryland, D.C., and Virginia got together, and we decided that we would run a bus up to New York so that our people could be informed and hear firsthand what the National was doing. We ended up that each person, each area, was to divide it by three, and you know, you can have 15 from here, 20 from here, 30 from there, whatever. It ended up that Maryland had such a busload that they sent their own bus. Virginia ended up with its own bus, and D.C. sort of split between the two of us. So we did have two buses that went up on yesterday to New York. So I just got in this morning and then preached this morning, and so here I am again, so I need your prayers. I'm going to bed after this. I want to share with you, and it's such a blessing to be here with you. The theme, as I understand, is standing on the promise. And if I remember from my English days, that you don't answer a question with a question. But I'm going to break that rule today. And the reason I'm going to break that rule, because I want to sort of ask you, where are you standing? The theme is that you're standing on the promise. Sounds good. But the question becomes, where are you standing? It's very interesting that the people I'm looking at here are the people who are basically getting the job done. Am I worried that the auditorium is not full? No. I belong to a lot of organizations, and you always have a handful of people. I've gotten used to it. You just don't have masses unless there's something going on where, you know, something dramatic where everybody gets on board, they are pumped up for a minute, and then it dies away. And you have the faithful few who keep it going. And so I'm looking at some very interesting and some very key people right now. So I'm not bothered by the people who are here as far as crowd-wise, because I think I'm talking to the people I need to talk to. And that's so important that you understand that. If you keep looking for a crowd, you're going to be looking for the rest of your life. I'm looking at the people here. I'm looking at the people, young man there at the college. I'm looking at the people who are going to make this idea work, standing on the promise work. If it is going to work, I'm looking at the people who are going to do it. Now, that doesn't mean there might not be a few exceptions out there who couldn't get here for other reasons, but by and large, out of all the organizations I belong to, and president of four, Baptist Ministers Conference has 180 churches. I'll be meeting tomorrow because I'm the organist and pianist for that group. Out of 180 churches, we'll be lucky we have 35 there. I'm telling you what the Lord loves is the truth. We meet every first and third Monday. So we're going to meet tomorrow, and I'll guarantee you, I'll bet you, we won't have 35 people there out of 180. All I'm saying to you is, if you keep looking for the crowd, you're not going to get anything done. You have to make a personal commitment yourself. You have to have the passion for it. People say, why do you belong to so much? Why do you do this? Why do you do that? It's because I have a passion for it. And if you don't have a passion for it, people will say things and do things that will make you walk away from it. I'm talking to somebody. You've got to have a personal passion. My modus operandi is that I would love to leave the world better than I found it. That's a personal passion. I want to leave the world a little better than I found it. I want to leave something that was not here when I came. I can't answer for you. I wish I could. I don't know whether you want to leave anything or not. I don't know whether you care or not. It's personal. But I have a personal passion that I want to leave this world better than I found it. Let me get to what I was going to talk about, lest I keep you too long. Standing on the promise. And some persons have identified the promise as to the foundation piece as to why the NAACP was started. But let me say also that some of that has changed. We can no longer look at what got us started as to what's going to keep us and continue. You got it. The dynamics have changed. The genres have changed. Where are my young folk? All my young folk, raise your hand. I got a few back there. The style has changed. The genre, good word for you. The style has changed. It is more subtle. It is more camouflage. It is more hidden. And the danger is that we are offered jobs that put us in position that help us to stop being black and start to becoming something else. There's a real danger there. Let me talk to you just a few moments. As long as the church wore scars, they made headway. When they began to wear medals, the cause languished. It was a greater day for the church when Christians were fed to the lions than when they brought season tickets and sat in the bleachers. Some of y'all will get that going home. As long as the church wore scars, as long as the NAACP wore scars, the dogs biting you and the police beating you side the head and the fire department shooting you with hoses and all of that, as long as we had all of that, we made headway. But when we began to move in the suburbs and the $400,000 homes, get the better jobs, and I'm not knocking that, it was a greater day for the church. It was a greater day for the NAACP. We're not being fed to the lions, but we're being fed to the dogs and all these other things, huh? Than when we bought season tickets and started sitting in the bleachers. Where are you standing? I wish I had time to let you chat. I do this at church sometimes. Y'all turn and talk about this thing for about 2 minutes. Because that's a relevant question. And you have to answer that question. Where, you know, every now and then you ought to just brush away the abstractions and say, and ask yourself the question, self, where am I standing? Now, what you got to do is be honest with self. So many of us jive self. One of the great people said, to thy own self be true. That becomes difficult. But you have to answer that. May I paraphrase by asking you another question? Does your life matter? Does your life matter? I want that to sink in. The buzzword presently is covenant. Somebody say covenant. And this was made conscious by Taffy Smiley. His book, The Covenant with Black America, and his latest book, The Covenant in Action. Standing on the promise. I'm afraid that too many of us are still standing on the promise and doing nothing but standing there. So Taffy Smiley wrote a book about the agreement, the covenant, the testament, all mean the same thing. You can say the Old Testament, the Old Agreement, the Old Covenant, the New Testament, the New Agreement, the New Covenant. He talked about the covenant with Black America, but he found out that that was not enough to have a covenant, to sit down and list all of the objectives and what we ought to be doing and all of that. All of that sounds good. He found out it had to be some action. There's an action piece to it. So then he says, the covenant in action. I've already told you about the covenant in print. And I found out that that didn't get the job done. I've got to talk to you now about covenant in action.
Yeah.
And for those of you who read about me in the paper, one of the things I said was, is that I'm going to take the NAACP from advocacy to action.
All right.
I think that's the piece that's missing. It is so easy to achieve, and because of the difficulty and struggle of achieving, to sit down and enjoy my family and my house, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's a danger after the struggle has been so great. Just let, I've got mine, they get theirs. Life is made up more than that. Life has more meaning than that. Let me talk to you about three dimensions of behavior. Everything we do is a response to how we behave or react to it. If I came out there and slapped somebody, they think I'm crazy, the automatic thing would be to slap me back without thinking. They might think about it after they slap me back. But that's the reaction. Because our behavior is there. It is part of our socialization process. But Dave and all those, Chris Worth and Bloom and all of, they talked about three dimensions of behavior that I want to share with you. There is a cognitive dimension of behavior. There is an affective dimension of behavior. And then there is a psychomotor dimension of behavior. Permit me to just illuminate those just a little bit. My college student there. Cognitive is how we know. Cognition. Cognitive is our gray matter, our brain, how we know. And a lot of us read the paper, or we look at the television, we keep up. So a lot of us got a lot of knowledge, cognitive, how we know, gray matter. Then we have affective, that's our heart, how we feel. And some of us get excited, and then that excitement dies off. But what we need is psychomotor, is how we do. A lot of people know. We know that we need better health care. We know that we need to do something about kids dropping out of school. We know this. Cognitive. Nobody in here that doesn't know that. Cognitive. And every now and then, we might, well, I think it's bad, we feel it. But how many of us, at the psychomotor level, we do something about it? And Nike picked it up, right? What did Nike say? Just do it. Don't think about these $150 tennis that you can't afford, just buy them. Took it from the cognitive to know, the affective to feel, to psychomotor to do. And that's where we are. That's where we are in our communities. That's where we are in our fraternities and sororities and our churches and our schools. We have too many people who have become at ease in Zion. I'm tired of meeting and doing nothing but talking about it again. We can have some of the best discussions on the discussions we already had on the discussions that we've already had. To do the psychomotor part. The great theologian Howard Thurman, in his book, The Creative Encounter, states, modern American man tends to be ashamed of his feelings. To feel deeply is to seem emotional, sentimental, and weak. The rumor abounds that feelings are vapored, vague, escape hatches for the human spirit. There is a widespread insistence upon objectivity in observation, thinking, and living. Hence, to feel is to become subjective, and therefore to act without the objectivity of responsibility. It is to do violence to the rational processes. Lewis Mumford has given expression to a phrase descriptive of modern man's temper. Listen at this now. How to feel and at the same time be intellectually self-respecting makes for conflict. Y'all are gonna catch some of this stuff going home. Y'all too quiet for me. How to feel and at the same time be intellectually self-respecting makes for conflict. You need to think about that. Some people at that crossroad, psychomotor to do, a call to action. And as I said, Nike picked it up. You know, there is a theocentric covenant and there is an anthropocentric covenant. Theocentric, coming from religion, theology, is a God-centered covenant, which is there is a God, and you have to make that decision as to how you're going to act that out. Anthropocentric covenant is a man-centered covenant. Taffy Smiley listed 10. Listen at them. And I know you've heard them before, but listen. Number one was health care. Number two, public education. Three, unequal justice. Four, police profiling. I met with some Latinos last Monday for a press release, and they're talking about how the police are profiling them. It's not only blacks. See, I shouldn't be stopped and arrested or stopped because I'm driving while black.
That's right.
But guess what? Some of my white sisters and brothers got to help me get that point over. The day is past when we just blacks all have to get together. No, no, no. This has to cross racial lines. We have to do what's right. Justice is blind. Affordable neighborhoods. And isn't it bad that we done took the neighbor off of it and now we're in the hood? Democracy, our roots, good jobs. Wealth, economy, prosperity, environmental justice, greenhouse, and all of that. Closing the racial digital divide. Now, he's listing all of these, and it's nothing I said that you haven't heard. So let's have another meeting and talk about these again. You're on board. The question before the House is, does your life matter? And where do you stand? What is your raison d'etre? What is your reason for being? Why do you exist? Why were you created? Why? Oh, you all ought to entertain those questions sometimes. It'll frighten you. Does your life matter? Have you really paused and taken the time to meditate and ask yourself the question, is all I do is go to work, come home, look at TV, eat, get out there in the traffic and go to work, that I don't like my job, come home, eat, look at a little TV, try to get some sleep, get up. What is the meaning of my life? What is my purpose in life? Why do I be?
Yeah.
Why do you be? Why do you be and you be? Why do you exist? God didn't need anything he made. He didn't need anything. But what did God need with trees and rivers, fleecy white clouds, rolling plains? blackberries and computers. What did God need with that? No. God didn't need any of that. And yet, like a mammy bending over his baby, he needed some mud until to form you and then breathe into you the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Why do you be? Why were you created? Just to occupy space? Oh, I feel this thing deeply. You've got to have a passion for what you do.
Thank you, sir.
Without passion, you will throw up your hands in despair.
Yes, sir.
Each one of us has a certain rite of passage. Y'all let me know. Pull my tail when the time is out, because I feel I just finished preaching today, so I ain't going to preach, but I do feel all right, y'all. I do. Each one of us has a certain rite of passage. You have an ontological rite. You have a teleological right, and you have an eschatological right.
All right.
Your ontological right, you have the right to be born. You have the right to exist. People are talking about illegitimate. Ain't no such thing. When God got ready for you to come, you came.
Yes.
So don't let people keep putting that weight on you. Ain't nobody here that God didn't want. Daddy or no daddy. Hello. Now see, I could mess with that too. Because Eve was born or created and she had no mama. And Jesus came and he had no earthly daddy. Y'all not feeling me? It's in the book. There's Adam. He ain't got no wife, he ain't got no mama, no nothing. There's Adam. And according to the record, God put him to sleep. Took a rib by his side, and there was Eve. Ain't had no mama. Cain said, Mary, you are favored. The immaculate conception. No earthly daddy. Ain't never had a man, and there comes Jesus. I wish I had somebody to understand where I was going with this thing. So you have an ontological right. You have a right to be here. And don't let anybody tell you that you're here wrong and all that kind of foolishness. No. You got a right to be here. An ontological right. And then you have a teleological right. You have a right to be here with purpose and objective and goals. Don't just be here with no rhyme or reason, no goals, no nothing. And then you have an eschatological right. You got the right to die and check out of here. Y'all missed that. I didn't know you ain't ready. But it's still true.
Right.
I don't know many people over 150 years old. In fact, I don't know any. So you have an ontological right, the right to be here. You have a teleological right, the right to be here with purpose. And then you have an eschatological right, the right to die and check out of here and hope that you go in the right place. Hello, somebody. Rabbi Harold Kushner wrote, "And when all you have ever wanted isn't enough, our souls are not hungry for fame and comfort and wealth and power. Those rewards create almost as many problems as they solve. Our souls are hungry for meaning, for the sense that we have figured out how to live so that my life will matter."
Thank you, sir.
Accumulating all that stuff. And I have never seen a U-Haul behind a hearse going to the graveyard.
Thank you.
You're going to leave all that stuff for somebody. One of the basic motivations, I'll be finishing in a minute. I got something more to tell, but I can't tell it all today. Y'all had to get me back. One of the basic motivations in life is to do something that our life will have mattered. So the question is, where do you stand on these promises that we're talking about? I told you earlier, my modus operandi is I want to leave the world just a little bit better than I found it.
Yes, sir.
When it is his to call and mine to answer, hush, somebody's calling my name.
Yes.
I want my epitaph to read that he left the world better than he found it. And the question is still before the house, does your life matter? For your life to matter, you must be something, do something, and leave something. This is Black History Month, so I want to give you a personal example before I wind this thing up. May I give you a personal example? Well, when I was a boy, I was born in a segregated colored community, and I went to a segregated colored school, and I drank water from a color segregated fountain. And I went to a color segregated toilet, and you couldn't try on clothes at a segregated department store, and when you got home with them, you hoped they fit. You rode in the back of a segregated bus, huh? You couldn't eat at the restaurant because that was segregated. You went to a segregated movie if you had any entertainment. You attended a color segregated church, and if you got sick, you went to a color segregated doctor. And if he had to put you in the hospital, you went to a colored segregated hospital. And if you died, you went to a colored segregated undertaker who buried you in a colored segregated cemetery to go to an integrated heaven. Lord, have mercy, Jesus. Lord, have mercy, Jesus. There was something wrong with that picture. How ironic. I've been told all my young life that I was as good as anybody else, and I wanted to be somebody. But all around me was denying my somebody-ness. This is Black History. I'm just going to throw a little bit of this in. This is what wasn't even supposed to be there. I felt deeply an individual responsibility to leave the world better than I found it, to change things. I wanted my life to matter. One way to change things was to vote. Another way to change things was to join the civil rights movement. For me to qualify just to register to vote, I had to recite, listen to this now, from memory, the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice. Huh? Ensures domestic tranquility. Blah, blah. I had to recite that from memory before they would let me register to vote. I'm telling you what the Lord loves is the truth. And now you can go to DMV, you can go to church, you can go anywhere you want to register to vote, and people still won't register, and then after some folk register, they still won't vote. What's wrong with us? I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. I hope this little speech is going to help somebody. I ain't come way up here for hello somebody. But you must not only vote, listen at this now, I'm talking to folk who matter. You must run for office. As long as other man or woman running things, what they gonna do? They gonna hire their friends, invite their, y'all don't know that yet.
Right.
Why they gonna hire you when they got friends over there telling them to give them a job? Until you get in position that you can hire some folk, you need to run for office, for city council and for school board and for board of supervisors and stuff. You need to run and make a difference. You'll be surprised. Sometimes you're there by yourself and you can't invite or outvote all them folk, but at least they have a little more human decency when somebody's sitting there looking at them. Something they won't do cause one of us there. So you only need to register and vote. You need to run for, I hope somebody here will catch that. Secondly, I joined the fight for freedom. I joined the greatest civil rights organization in the world, the NAACP. I joined as a youngster. And I became the president of our local branch and went on to become the president of the college chapter and youth council. And presently came the president of Henrico County, and I'm presently the president of the state. Nothing but God's grace and God's favor. But I paid my dues as the local college president and chapter, my hometown in Suffolk. We all went out and protest the sit-ins, went to Woolworths, went over to a CVS, it is now People's Drugstore. Person spat right in my face. This is Thursday, Friday. On Sunday morning, I was coming from Sunday school, went down to the corner to gas the car. The police said, hey, the police chief wants to see you. I said, well, all right, I'll drive. No, you can't drive your car. Get in my car. Well, I didn't want to resist because they can hit you side of the head and you can't say nothing. So I was very obedient. Got in the car, went downtown. Chief of police was there. The mayor was there. All the big dogs were there. Chief looked at me and said, you know, Vine said, you're on scholarship at that college there, and so if you don't sign this affidavit here saying that you're not going to lead any more protests, we're going to take that scholarship. I looked Chief in his eye and said, Chief, before I would relegate myself as a man, I'd die and go to hell. And they said, lock the nigger up. Fingerprinted me, put the number across there, and locked me up. And then made the bond so high nobody could afford it. I had a first cousin who had to put her house up to get me out. Been there. Get on the Trailway bus to go to Norfolk from my hometown, Suffolk. Had been sitting in the back of the bus. Spirit spoke to me and said, you NACP. Said, you better than the back of the bus. Next day, I sat in the front of the bus. The bus driver cursed me out. Get your so-and-so black so-and-so and the black so-and-so, so-and-so. No fanfare. Nobody there but me. But a passion for justice. I wish somebody were hearing me. You've got to have a passion for justice. You've got to have a passion for what's right. And you don't need a fanfare. You don't need a trumpet sound. You don't need a crowd. You do what's right because it's the right thing to do. Yeah. You stand not only on that promise, you enact the promise by doing what's right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I live long enough that I've been colored. I've been Negro. I've been black. I've been African American. And 10, 15 years from now, I don't know what I'm going to be. But I'm going to still be for justice. Let me see if I can sort of close this out. I don't want to bore you so long that you say he was good, but he was too long. But it's interesting. I preached this morning from Acts chapter 17, verse 26, where it says that God, King James Version, where it says that God has made of one blood all nations for to dwell on all the face of the earth. Uno, one blood. Y'all don't want to admit it, but all us can. And we just want to come to grips with that. And stop acting so foolish. And come together and get this thing straight. If we don't, we're going to perish out there being foolish. So. I preached on that, and the topic was, if I had to tag it, is that everybody is God's somebody. Everybody. is God somebody. And as I come to the conclusion, parents, listen. When I was coming up, people would get on you, but my parents had enough sense enough to give me that balance that I needed. Had people tell me, well, you skinny. And I'd go home sort of sad. Mom would come in. No, sir, son, said nothing wrong with your legs. They're made to walk, and you walk pretty good. You know what I'm saying? Oh, they're talking about my kinky hair. No. Mom or daddy would say, look, son, said, anything straight is dead. Anything curly is alive. You get that balance? Well, they're talking about my big lips. No. People in Hollywood inject and trying to get their lips big. That's just more to kiss when you're of age. Your big nose, no, just better to smell with. The food is better. But you get the balance there. There's a balance there. And you know, we encounter all of these subhuman experiences where some people feel that they are superior, some feel like they are somebody and everybody else is a nobody, but when confronted with certain experiences, all human emotions will react in the same manner. Let me illustrate that and I'll be finished. If you cut me, I bleed red blood just like you. If you scold me, I cry. I don't cry in Swahili. I just cry. If you tickle me out, you tickle me out, laugh. I don't laugh in French. I just laugh. If you love me, I respond. I don't make love in English. I just make love. Where do you stand? You have to answer that question. I want to thank the chapters here who have come together to give us this experience. And from this experience, you will have to make the decision how much passion you have and where you stand. But I'm convinced that I'm looking at the people who are going to get that job done. I love you. I thank you. And God bless you.